You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to The Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Archaeology Show, episode 307.
On today's show, we have three recent news stories about researchers using ancient DNA in new and innovative ways.
Let's dig a little deeper into those teeth, get in the roots. They hold the DNA. Well, and all the isotopes.
Like there's DNA in lots of places.
And the food.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I hope it doesn't show my Chick-fil-A history. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
That's what I say. You're trying to be me?
All right. So we always start with where we're at.
We do. And we are, God, it's so crazy. This travel north is so crazy for us being not from northern places. Well, you are, though. You're from Washington.
That's northern in the United States.
It's northern in the United States.
But not in America.
Not in the continent of North America, obviously. But you have a little more experience with the like later sunsets and stuff like that. But
a little bit.
It's nothing like what we're experiencing here in Canada. And soon to cross into Alaska, probably next weekend, we'll be making the crossing. But we're in the Yukon, and it's 7:15 right now, and the sun, it looks like it's 3 o'clock out. Like it's the afternoon right now. Yeah,
we're boondocking, which for RV terms is not in an organized campground site, right. And we have no services. Mm-hmm. So we're just on our own. Nope, we're not plugged in anything.
Not plugged
that's
in.
That's boondocking.
Yeah, and all our own power, all our own water, all our own tanks to hold, you know, sewer, and whatever, all that. Yeah.
It's 7:30, almost 7:30 p.m. as we're recording this, and we're running a few heating systems because it's cold, because we're in the Yukon, and it's like 50 degrees and windy out, so it's cold.
It's super windy. Right. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the sounds of the wind are coming through this recording. They're so loud.
They're probably not, but so there's a few heating systems. There's our residential refrigerator, our some other stuff. There's the Starlink satellite system, which takes up power.
Yep.
There's our other internet repeater system, which takes up power, our security cameras, stuff like that.
Yep.
And yet we are maintaining at zero on our power usage because our solar panels at 7:30 p.m. are maintaining our batteries.
And not only are they maintaining our batteries, but it's cloudy out. Yeah. So there's enough sun coming through the clouds at 7:30 p.m. to mostly maintain. Actually, with the furnace just came on, so we're dropping, our power's going down a little bit right now, but the furnace won't have to be on for long to get us warmed up. So anyway, that's a little bit of insight into boondocking lifestyle. It's a really fun power management game
The other cool thing about where we're at here in the Yukon, and this is a preview of an episode to come, is we are where horses evolved. And I love that.
I know. I love it so much.
Yeah.
We have been visiting cool places along the way because, you know, like we're nerds at heart. We always will be. So we want to learn about the places that we're traveling through. And to be honest, coming through Canada is like a lot of bare mountain land. Yeah. But we come across these occasional really cool places. So we're going to talk about some of those in the episode next week.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. So,
but this week,
we
really needed to get back to the news because there's been some cool stuff lately.
Yeah. So we were both researching news articles, and both of us independently found an article about that had something to do with DNA.
Yeah.
And then so we're like, ding, 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 theme time. So then we had
We love our themes.
So then we had to find a third article about DNA.
Which turns out was super easy because we did find a third one. It was published like just a few days ago. So obviously, like, DNA is a hot topic right now.
Yeah.
Maybe. I think a lot of researchers are turning to DNA because the technology just gets better and better and better as time goes on. And I think they're just turning to that as a way to help, like, learn about past societies. Well,
I think one of the things is we're getting better at extracting usable DNA from archaeological remains and older archaeological remains. Right.
Yes.
And getting DNA off of things that aren't even like bone. Right. Yeah. Like things that people used.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
There's so many really interesting techniques that people are starting to use. And you're right. It's not even necessarily on the bones themselves. Although I think in these articles it is on human remains.
Yeah. Yeah.
DNA studies. But anyway. Yeah.
All right.
So this first article is called DNA from 9,000-year-old skeletons disproves migratory waves theory from South Africa.
Right. And so
It was published in Earth.com.
Yeah, among other places.
Yes, but, yeah.
I mean, honestly, when we were, again, pulling things, I don't know why you picked this one out, but I had actually seen this article earlier this week. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why I probably would have grabbed this one, because it's why I grabbed the next article that we're going to talk about, is I love it when things either get disproved upended or changed or something like that. And the headline of the next one kind of did the same thing.
Yeah. And often that's the stuff that makes it into the news. So it's the things that we see a lot. And I think after I started reading this, it wasn't quite as like earth shattering as they like to make it sound in the headline. But, you know, that's news articles for you. They're always trying to grab your attention and make you read it. And I'm really glad I did read it because it is super interesting.
All right. So they started this with researchers analyzing ancient DNA from 13 human remains found at Oakhurst Rock Shelter in Southern Cape Province of South Africa.
Yeah. And I know that doesn't sound like very many, just 13 human remains. But those skeletons, they cover a gigantic time span from 1,300 years ago to 9,000 years ago, which still isn't very many skeletons for such a large time span.
Yeah, that's shocking.
Yeah, but it is a really long time to find humans in the same place at the same site.
And I'm actually like super shocked by that. Like they had no idea the other ones were probably even there.
No, how would they? I mean, they probably had legends and stories and myths and things that connect back, but
it's not the burials though.
No, but like the people who did the burials had those kind of stories, but they were definitely different people.
And leading to that theory, the study found a genetic continuity over those 9,000 years between these 13 skeletons.
Yeah.
Finding that modern groups such as the Komani, I'm probably going to pronounce these wrong, but the Komani and the, I'm going to get this one really wrong.
I know, this is a hard one.
Karetjamensi.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Have direct ancestry to the prehistoric groups at Oakhurst.
Yeah. So not only are 9,000 years worth of human burial history having genetic continuity, but also to the people that still claim ancestry to this region. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. And that, I think, is why this article is super interesting.
Yeah. So this finding challenges previous theories about the area that migratory waves significantly reshaped populations in this region during this 8,000 year period because they thought people coming in would change the genetic composition, basically, you know, bringing in new DNA, changing things around, but apparently not.
Yeah. And it's not like these people were just like sitting there for 8,000 years plus doing the same things over and over and over again. There might not have been like a major genetic influx, but they were still developing new technological things like stone tools and various other like cultural practices and things like that. Like they were growing and shifting as a population the way that you see in places where that growth and shifting is contributed to like a mixing of communities and people who are sending information back and forth, which feeds, you know, ingenuity and growth. Sure. Right. But that wasn't necessarily happening here. So that, I think, is what is really interesting.
Yeah. They said that no major genetic influx actually occurred until about 1300 years ago.
Yeah. Really neat.
So the genetic stability here suggests that technological changes were locally driven and not necessarily a result of incoming populations. Because when you look at stone tools, pottery, things like that, depending on what time period you're looking at, a lot of times technological changes are the result of either trade or cultural influences from other groups moving in or things like that. But they're saying that with this genetic stability that maybe they just, you know,
they just kind of
evolved
themselves.
Their own tech on their own.
Yeah, they just figured out how to do things.
I mean, that is one way to say that. And I guess you got to kind of, with anthropology, you really have to go with sort of play the odds on this, which is where I kind of have a problem with anthropology a little bit, because when you start playing the odds on these, and statistical probabilities state that, yes, if many cultures across the planet have done things all kind of the same way, then it stands to reason when you find another culture, chances are they did things the same way. Right. Mm-hmm. You usually don't find a culture that has done something differently, so drastically differently in their 8,000 years of evolving technologically.
Right.
That they're going to do it differently. But there is a possibility that they just, and we'll find this out maybe in the third segment, but there is a possibility that they just liked their genetic insularness, like their own people.
Yeah.
But that they still reached out and they still had cultural influences technologically.
Yeah, because what the limitation of information like this is that you know that other humans from other places were not contributing their genes to this community.
Right.
Because the genetic makeup is so stable. But that doesn't mean that people from this community weren't leaving, going out and getting knowledge from other places and bringing it back to this community with them. And it seems unlikely that like somewhere along the way, somebody wouldn't bring back a wife or a husband or whatever and like bring in new genetics.
Well, it'd have to be a lot to contribute to the gene pool, though.
It would have to be a lot. Yeah. So if it was a one-off situation, then it wouldn't really probably add too much to the gene pool.
John steps out a little bit. He's not going to contribute to the gene pool too much by having, you know. But anyway.
Well, but it's about, it's about bringing them into the community, though, and then having those genes get really embedded into the population. And that just didn't happen too much. So,
you know, the other thing is, as far as the technological challenges go with analyzing these, you would be able to see the cultural influences of other technology in the actual diversity of that technology. And sometimes the patterns, you know, when it comes to pottery and things like that, and you might be able to see those influences in the designs themselves. But anyway, moving on from that.
Well, the other thing that is interesting about what they were finding here is that this group of people did have great genetic diversity within the community, right? So
they weren't incestual.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So they were not like this super tiny isolated population. They were kind of a larger community who stayed together and did things together. And maybe that community was just large enough that they didn't need influence from outsiders to develop new stone tool technologies and cultural practices and anything else that they were, you know, that they developed over that 8,000 year time period.
However, it does seem like about 1,300 years ago, there was a technology they couldn't live without.
Because there's an explosion 1,300 years ago, for sure.
DNA signatures appeared linked to pastoralists and farmers from the East and West Central Africa. And these people introduced domesticated animals, farming, and new languages into Southern Africa. So the whole idea of farming and not having to go out and wrestle with the lions for the latest kill was like super enticing, probably.
I mean, for sure. Like what they were doing worked for a really, really long time and they didn't need to change. But then 1300 years ago, this just proved to be a probably a safer lifestyle, a better lifestyle, a more efficient lifestyle, whatever it was. But those genes got introduced into the population. And I just love that there's like that hard break where you can really see that it changed right there. It's cool.
Yeah, cool thing is this rock shelter, Oakhurst here, provides one of the longest continuous archaeological sequences in all of Africa, making it a key site for understanding regional prehistory. That's according to the article.
Yes.
And it's but it's a pretty cool site with that length of time involved in it.
Yeah, it's crazy that rock shelters are just they are the gift that just keeps on giving, right?
Yeah.
Preservation is great. People buried, you know, their loved ones there. They just have so many artifacts and they were used by people for thousands of years. They're awesome.
I swear if anybody ever invented time travel, I would just go back into some rock shelter that means nothing. Like there was nothing really in it. And I would bury the different annual Starbucks mugs that come out.
Why would you want to ruin it?
Just for some future archaeologist to be like, what is going on? Look how they changed.
Oh my God. How does your brain work? It's so confusing.
Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I don't think we mentioned this, but this article was published in Nature, the original source material article. So you can go and read the original article if you want. We've got that linked in the show notes below. You know, it's sciencey and jargony. And I really liked how the Earth.com article sort of condensed it into something that is, you know, readable and understandable and, and gets across the main things about what's important about this article. Ancient DNA. Awesome. You know,
whoever owns Earth.com, when we become a a multi-planetary society and some like the government of Earth, when it becomes one thing, wants to own Earth.com, somebody's going to make like several trillion dollars.
Who do you think owns Mars.com?
Probably Elon Musk.
Oh, God.
But I don't know. I'm going to go buy it right now if nobody does.
I think you probably should.
Yeah. Mars.org.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mars.tv. I'm going to buy that because Mars needs TV networks. So
we were just talking about getting rid of all of our streaming services.
We were.
Buy TV.
Yes, buy TV. But I'm going to own that anyway.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Because you Sounds know those good. Big TV people, they don't actually watch TV.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right,
they don't sure. have time.
No, they don't.
Yeah. You know who else didn't have time? I don't know. That's not a good segue.
That's pretty good. Go with it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we're going to move over to Colombia and talk about ancient DNA from a mysterious group that disappeared 2,000 years ago. Well, at least their DNA did. Mm-hmm. All right, back in a minute. Welcome back to episode 307 of The Archaeology Show. And this next article about DNA is called Ancient DNA Reveals Mysterious Indigenous Group from Colombia that disappeared 2,000 years ago. And it's mm-hmm. from livescience.com. I always love things, talking about the last one, they're mm-hmm. like, disappear.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I mean, you know they didn't disappear.
It's such dramatic language, right?
They genetically mm-hmm. disappear.
Yeah. Also, like, you have to be very careful with words like that because yeah. they disappeared from the archaeological record, which is different from disappearing from the real world. They might just not yeah. be in the archaeological record,
right.
you know? So, yeah. I mean,
it's possible we're missing some sites or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's also possible that they just became such a small population that they're not genetically represented anymore.
Exactly.
Right. So let's get into it.
Yeah, let's get into it. Because it is really interesting what yeah. happened here.
Anyway, we've got an ancient DNA analysis again mm-hmm. that uncovered a previously unknown lineage of hunter-gatherers who lived near present-day Bogota in Colombia. Mm-hmm. And this group existed around 6,000 years ago and then disappeared approximately 2,000 years ago, again genetically,
yeah.
leaving no genetic descendants in later populations.
So the researchers sequenced genomes from 21 skeletons. Again, not a huge number of skeletons, but yeah. I guess you could draw broad conclusions from a small sample set like that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this is not the first example of that happening. So.
Right.
But it spans 5,500 years and includes individuals from the Chekwa site, which is 6,000 years ago, the Herrera period, which is 2,000 years ago, the Muisca period, which is 1,200 to 500 years ago, and the Guane population, which are 530 years ago.
Yeah.
So quite a broad range. And it sounds like they're not all from the same site, but they are from the same area. So right. a little different from our last article. These represent an entire region, essentially.
Yeah, the Chekwa group's DNA was distinct and not closely related to indigenous North American, Central, or South American populations, which
so interesting.
Is odd.
It is. The genetic evidence suggests that because they are not closely related to anybody in any of the North or South American continents,
mm-hmm.
then there's a complete population replacement in this region specifically about 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, right?
Yeah.
Because you think of an unbroken connection from the people here today mm-hmm. back to the first people that crossed over, you know, the Bering Land Bridge however long ago, and maybe it's not an unbroken chain because probably yeah. there was multiple migrations, blah, blah, blah. There's lots of reasons for that, but yeah.
Yeah, we're on the Bering Land Bridge right now.
No. We're not on the land bridge, exactly.
We're not on the bridge, but we're in Beringia. We're in what was called the the continent? Is that the right word? The
land mass?
The land mass that is Beringia. It's not really a continent, I guess.
Well, kind of. We're like on the border of it. We'll get into that next week in our next episode.
Whitehorse was on the border of it. We're in it.
Okay.
Yeah. Remember the maps.
We're going to have to relook at our maps again, especially yeah. before we talk about it next week.
All right. Do your homework.
Yeah,
homework. We got an episode coming.
We're going to do our homework too, for sure.
I know.
Unlike the social media post that went out today on ArcPodNet. Go look at it if you haven't seen it. It's so funny.
I don't think I've seen that one yet.
Well, I'm not going to spoil it for you. You need to go watch it. It's a very, very funny meme that our social media person, Tilly, put together about the Ethnocynology podcast. And mm-hmm. I super loved it. I hope everybody else did, too. It was hilarious. Yes.
All right. Go check that out. ArcPodNet on Instagram.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, cultural shifts, like the adoption of ceramics during the Herrera period, were likely brought by migrating groups from Central America, they say in the article. So why does this matter?
It matters because the Herrera period is 2,000 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is when the population replacement happens.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's when you see the adoption of ceramics mm-hmm. and, you know, the advancement of these groups. Kind of the opposite of our last article. Well, actually, not the opposite. These were people who came in and brought these new technologies with them, and they essentially replaced the population. And it's hard to say if it's because the people there just didn't intermingle with the new people and therefore they sort of died out and aren't represented genetically. Or maybe these people, their genetics were so dominant that they just masked the genetics of the people that they were mixing with. There's like so much going on with genetics that it's really hard to say exactly what happened. But genetically speaking, one came in and the first one disappeared. So
yeah, they say that these types of migrants too probably introduced they say the Chibchan languages, which I hadn't actually heard of before. It's like a language family. Yeah. Which are still spoken in Central America today.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So basically what they're saying is these people who shared this genetic group here really just didn't continue.
Yeah.
They didn't, they were replaced by other groups and probably replaced physically. It sounds like what we're saying here, they just either were bred out or, you know, I don't know, killed out some way. And
it could have been, it could have been through warfare that maybe the groups were small enough that they were all killed through conflicts. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe they were preferentially selecting within their own group. And because of that, they ended up not entering the gene pool of the group that became dominant, you know? Yeah. So just the genetic evolutionary genetics is so freaking interesting to me. I took a class on it in college. I know I've talked about this before.
Yeah.
It was like my favorite biology class. And I think it's because it was that place where biology and anthropology meet a little bit. Cause you're talking about evolution, but also biology. It's just so interesting.
I hope someday if this podcast ever gets famous, that somebody takes like we watch Last Week Tonight all the time. And like, I want to see some segment where it's like Rachel loves to mention her
genetics class. Her one class she took in college about evolutionary biology.
I took a class in evolutionary biology one time.
There'd also be one for Peru. For me. There'd be one for Africa for you.
Yes.
And there'd probably be one with like bad movie quotes from you.
Yes, probably.
That's right. We are who we are.
That's right.
Just own it. I know.
If somebody wants to do that, we will 100% put it on our social media.
1,000%. It will be done.
Anyway,
it's a lot of work. So if you're thinking about doing it, just know that it's a lot of work.
We will guaranteed not pay you for that, but we'll take it.
We will pay you as much as we get paid to do this podcast.
Exactly. It's the wine I'm drinking. We'll have a glass of wine with you if we ever see you.
Oh yeah, that's true. 100%. We would definitely do that.
Or water, whatever you want.
Yeah, you know, no pressure.
Yeah.
Anyway,
more migrations coming in. Later populations in the region show genetic links to pre-Hispanic individuals from Panama, suggesting multiple ways of migration and language expansion. It just goes to what you were saying about the fact that genetic information is actually really, really, really accurate if you've got, you know, more and more and more samples, right?
Yeah.
So we could, they're saying all this because it means that we can really trust what we're learning from this sample set of, what was it, 21 skeletons?
Yep.
It's just, you know, sampling those numbers across time is accurate. And because we know it is.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a lot of sample sets from around the world, and we've got three articles right now on, you know, ancient DNA from very different parts of the planet.
Yeah.
You know, different continents, different regions.
Yeah,
so,
for sure. I mean, it's really cool. I love this stuff so much.
Yeah.
It's so complicated. And I really admire the people who do this kind of work because there's so much like statistics involved and like a lot of math. There's a lot of mathing happening in these kind of studies. And I really admire the people that do this work because I think they're putting out some really, really cool conclusions and pushing the field into thinking about things a little bit differently. It's really cool.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now we're going to move on the next segment over to China and find out what 60 different people buried 4,500 years ago have in common. Back in a minute.
It's the ladies.
Welcome back to the Archaeology Show, episode 307, the ancient DNA episode.
Ancient DNA. I love it.
All right. And now it's a segment we call It's the Ladies.
Oh, man, you're making me leave that in, aren't you? I said I was going to edit it out.
Yes, Rachel said she was going to edit that out, but you've already heard it, knowing it hasn't been edited out. But I just wanted to do that because she said she would edit it out.
And now so I can't.
That's what we call behind the scenes.
Or I could just take all of this out.
You could, but then people would never know you were being a jerk. Wow. So,
cool. Awesome. Yeah. Okay, that's fine. I can see
Okay, so this next article, because we found two articles on ancient DNA. Mm-hmm. I had my AI bots go out and find me another article on ancient DNA published mm-hmm. within the last week, and they actually found one from Nature from China. Now, here's the problem. This actually hasn't been widely published in the media yet.
Not yet.
It has been published in Chinese media.
Yeah.
And there was actually an article on phys.org that the AI bots found, but it's been pulled for some reason. It's been changed. There's an actual link.
Yeah.
But it no longer exists on phys.org, and I can't figure out why.
Not sure, because the science and the article seem good here. Well, and then Nature would take it down if it was not good.
Nature either would have pulled it or published a retraction.
Yeah, it was published 4 days ago. Yeah. So, I mean, it's been out long enough that if there were a huge problem, I think they probably would have acted, but...
So we're just going to put that little caveat on it. There could be a problem, but I doubt there is.
There's nothing controversial here,
no,
in my opinion.
Not really.
It's adding, what this article does is what so many have done in the last few years, just add more evidence to the fact that women were not just like property of men in ancient society.
I mean, that's the one thing, if we're being honest, that could be a problem here. This is China we're talking about, modern day China.
Right.
Talking about an ancient Chinese thing. And we know modern day China likes to control the narrative.
They do, but I don't know why they'd have a problem with this. This doesn't seem to
suit. I don't know why they have a problem with anything, but who knows, right?
I don't know.
So it could have been pulled from other sources. Who knows? But anyway, we're not going to talk about that.
No,
we've linked to the Nature article.
Yep.
So you can go and it's open source.
It is.
So go read it. It's open source. Thick.
Oh, God. It's jargony. Like, we definitely pulled out our like main points from it, and I'm sure that we're missing some of the nuances.
Here you go.
But that's okay.
Do not read this entire article. You probably won't understand it. Nobody does, except for geneticists and people who are really in it. I'm not saying like people are stupid, like we barely understood it, right?
Right.
So, but read the abstract. That
I
gives you
I don't think I would even say I understood it. I just kind of like I got the basics, and then
read the abstract. There's no conclusion per se. There's often a conclusion section. Mm-hmm. There's no real conclusion. The last section is actually methods, which is
interesting.
So right before that, though, is a discussion section.
Yeah.
Read that.
Yeah.
If you read nothing else, read that, mm-hmm. or at least read the last paragraph of that, and you'll get between that and the abstract. And they always say if you want to just understand an article, read the abstract, read the discussion or conclusion, and then read the picture captions. And you'll get it.
Or just listen to us talk about it, and we'll give you our best understanding of how we are interpreting what we read.
Yeah. So here's the deal.
Yeah.
Researchers analyzed ancient DNA from isotopic data, and that's just where they got the DNA, basically, from 60 individuals buried at the Fujia archaeological site in eastern China, and these date between 2750 and 2500 BCE.
Yeah.
So like 4,500 years ago.
Yeah, quite long ago. And this is one point where I would say go look at the pictures and figures if you can, because the skeletal remains of these individuals are so well preserved. And like clearly they had some really, really good samples to work with here, which is probably why they were able to do a DNA analysis like this.
Yeah.
So the study identified two distinct cemeteries, and each of those cemeteries corresponded to a unique clan, and they were able to confirm that by using mitochondrial DNA analysis.
Yeah.
And a clan that is maternal like this is typically called matrilineal. So we'll use that word to describe this.
And mitochondrial DNA comes from?
Oh, yeah. It's passed down through women. So it's through the female relatives in a community.
And I'm having Rachel explain this because she took a class.
Thank you. I am the resident expert on resident as in resident of this RV expert on mitochondrial DNA. I have a degree in biology. What do you have?
And now Rachel loves talking about her degree in biology. If you don't watch Last Week Tonight, it's like,
I know,
it's cold.
I know.
I'm sorry. Okay. Anyway,
quit making fun of me. Anyway.
Yes.
You go.
Yes. Both males and females in these cemeteries were buried according to their maternal lineage, regardless of genetic sex.
Yeah.
Maternal lineage.
Yeah.
Right. So regardless of, I guess, where they were living, where their maternal line came from decided which cemetery they were buried in.
Yeah.
That's what that tells me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess you could have been living over here, but you're part of this maternal clan, like mm-hmm. your grandmother's over there, your mom's over there, you're being buried in that cemetery.
Even though you might have been living in this community over here your entire life because you were married, you married into that community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Regardless of your sex.
That is very interesting.
Yeah.
But these two communities were clearly like closely related too. They were sharing people back and forth. So that was part of it.
Which goes to the next point here. Yeah. Y chromosome analysis, so the men, mm-hmm. showed high paternal diversity while maternal lineages were highly uniform within each cemetery.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's super crazy, right?
Yeah.
The cemeteries were used for about 250 years, and it spans at least 10 generations, which that's a long time
yeah.
to be living in this social structure like this. It must have been stable, probably very cohesive to go for 10 generations like that. I can't even think of who my 10th ancestor back would be, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we're talking.
Well, it's always interesting to me how you have things like this. Like, I'm wondering what changed after 250 years too, because you have two cemeteries basically next to each other or near mm-hmm. each other enough, mm-hmm. Next to each other, close enough anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they both stopped being used at about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
They both started being used about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And they both had about the same amount of, you know, generations or so involved. They're very similar in time. Yeah. What happened at the end of this 250 years that caused all this to change?
I mean, there's usually three culprits, right? Conflict, resources, or weather.
Yeah.
Some kind of a weather event that sent them away. And usually that's related to resources. So those are kind of tied into one. If there's conflict, I feel like there would be evidence of that as well in the wounds received by people in the cemetery, but it doesn't sound like there was that present, or maybe they just weren't looking for that. I'm not really sure, but it's got to be one of those things, right? Sure. What else would do it?
I guess.
Yeah.
The genetic evidence here in testing showed that there was a high degree of what they call endogamy, and that is just a $10 word that means marrying within the community. But little evidence of close inbreeding. Mm-hmm. So they're marrying within the community, but they're not like marrying their brother and sister.
Right.
You know, we're like first cousins.
Yeah, exactly. So. The isotopic evidence suggests a millet-based agricultural diet, and there was some reliance on animal protein and possible use of marine or freshwater resources, meaning like the food sources from there. So that's what they were eating. I'm guessing they were doing this analysis based on teeth, because I think that's where you usually get the isotopic levels from.
Mm-hmm.
Although maybe that technology is advanced and they can pull it from bones now too. I'm not sure.
Well, I just searched the article because I realized we hadn't looked that up, and it said they analyzed the strontium isotope ratios, which tells me teeth anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
From 32 human tooth and animal samples.
Okay. There you go.
And compared them with newly obtained isotopic data from archaeological animal remains and modern wild plants collected across the study area. So
teeth. Yeah. They are so, so good at telling you things about a population. So that makes complete sense. You can tell so much about a person's diet. And almost more importantly, you can tell when a diet shifts too, because you see that change in this kind of analysis. It's really, really cool.
Interestingly, they said they also obtained 29 authenticated, well, I've never heard it called authenticated, but authenticated carbon and nitrogen isotope values from human bone and mm-hmm. dentine collagen. So still teeth, mm-hmm. but also bone. So the bone is interesting, but yeah, teeth are always the indicator of diet
mm-hmm.
and where things were basically where you came from. I think one of our probably most popular examples of that is Utzi the Iceman.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They did his tooth analysis and found that he basically did not grow up where he died.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. Which was a huge thing.
That's huge. I mean, it just shows one,
like, what was he
one
doing up
person,
there?
But one person migrating, like, right? Like,
what are you doing up on that glacier, Utzi?
Right?
What are you doing up there?
So the population had low residential mobility and little evidence of long-distance marriage exchange, which just is more support for this being a matrilineal society within these two communities that were, you know, potentially sharing people back and forth, but yeah.
Much like certain families I know of in North Carolina, they don't want to leave home. They don't want to leave mama. They want to stay close to home, except for one of them. They want to stay close to home.
That's me.
One of them is 6,000 miles away. The others are 6 minutes away.
You know, sometimes I want to get a house in the compound too.
I know. I'm sorry if She's listening.
Oh, yeah. If she's I tell her, done. She's going to have some words for you,
I
know. Sir.
I won't get a penne. Yeah. I won't get my own pasta.
You won't get pasta. My mom always makes a special pasta for Chris because she knows how much he loves it.
I do love her pasta.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you just made up for it, so we're good now.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
This research provides rare direct evidence of a matrilineal kinship system in ancient East Asia, contrasting with the more commonly found patrilineal systems in Neolithic societies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just more evidence that, you know, these female-focused communities did exist and that it's not that the patrilineal societies didn't exist. It's just that there was all kinds of varieties out there. And this is just one of them. And so it was patrilineal. And it was completely dependent on the place, the time, the people, like everything. And you could see any kind of all kinds of varieties on that. All kinds of spins on it, basically.
Yep.
The findings contribute to the debate on the diversity of social organization in early human societies and show that matrilineal systems could persist in communities with limited wealth accumulation and social stratification. Wow, that's a mouthful that we... We did not write that note. That came from either the article or somewhere else. But basically, it's just saying that what I just said, that these societies could happen anywhere. And it didn't need to be a super rich society or something that had a caste system or something like that. It just developed where it developed and that worked for them. And that's just how it was.
Yeah.
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 To time travel, right? Wouldn't it be so cool to just be able to see how these communities really did live.
Yeah.
But, and I don't know if we really got into this in the beginning, but like a matrilineal society like this, where you have this unbroken chain of mitochondrial DNA, all it means is that the women didn't leave. The women didn't leave the community. The men came in.
Yeah.
And that just shows that the women had the social structure was built around the women in that scenario. So presumably they were in roles of leadership and other types of higher level in the community as well.
Yeah.
That's all that means.
I was hoping it was all because the men were off building the Great Wall of China, but that was much, much, much later. I was looking it up. It was much later.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, comparatively speaking.
Okay. Comparatively speaking.
It wasn't close.
It wasn't.
Let's just put it that way.
It wasn't 2,000 years ago? Or no. 2,700 years ago?
4,500 years ago?
Oh.
No, it was not that long ago.
Okay.
Yeah. 2,500 BC is... Because we have to add the 80s and the BCs.
Oh, the 80s and the BCs.
It's the 80s and the CEs math.
They go together, right?
Yes.
I'm sorry. It was a long travel day.
And now Rachel gets dates wrong.
Everybody gets dates wrong. I'm not alone in this. Please.
I get dates wrong all the time.
Yeah, you
but
do.
But we edit it out.
Yeah, I'm going to edit this one out for show. That is going to be gone.
All right.
Well, unless you edit this podcast.
I'm probably not going to do that. I'm going to have another glass of wine and go look for ancient horse fossil bones on this lake bed that we're sitting on.
Cool. Let's do it. And camels. Don't forget the camels.
Camels. We're literally sitting on the edge of a lake.
Yes.
I mean, when I say edge of a lake, I'm not even joking.
Right.
Like, we're doing what RVers called boondocking, which is...
We talked about it in the beginning.
Oh, yeah, we did. It was so long ago. I don't remember. But we're like... I mean, probably 200 feet, maybe 150 feet from the edge of this lake. It's pretty windy, although it's died down in the last like 30 minutes here. And it's like literally right over there. And it's just ridiculous. Maybe we'll post this on our podcast.
I know. I literally just took a picture. You might have heard my screen capture.
Yeah. I'm going to actually grab that picture from her and post this on the Archaeology Instagram right now, ArcPodNet. And then you'll see this when the show comes out. So I guess with that, we will end this news episode. And like I said, we've got some stuff coming up on the Yukon. There's still a bunch of news coming out because there's a lot of cool things in the cycle.
And we have a new potential.
Oh, my God.
Like, theme series.
I wasn't even going to say it.
Oh, I am totally going to tease it. It's going to be great. We're not going to say what it is yet or anything, but we're doing it.
So what are you teasing?
We're just teasing that we have something new.
Are you going to tease the name of it?
No. You want to, don't you? What if we don't do it?
Well, that's true. What if we don't do it? But speaking it makes it happen, though. All right, we won't do it.
We won't do it.
All right, you just have to wait.
Yeah.
All right, so we have a new series similar to our timeline series.
Yeah,
this is what it was born out of. It's just a different theme.
Yeah, and our series never go like one right after the other. We just sort of pepper them in when we feel like it. So that's what this will be as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, with that, we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.arcpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at arcpodnet. Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day. The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.